Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. This will be a special edition and one that is very pertinent to current times. My guest this morning is Dr. James Smith. He is the director of the emergency room at the hospital. Is that the official title?
Medical director of emergency services, but let's not nitpick. I just worked there. I have for 18 years, I guess, a long time.
Well, thank you for being here. Being an ER doc, you get to see a little bit of everything.
It keeps me young.
Well, that's good. I want to talk this morning about, in general, heat-related illnesses, because the heat we have had, it kind of hit us quick. We didn't ramp up to it and kind of get acclimated to it, and it can present some problems.
Yeah, it hit us early this year. You know, typically, you know, end of July, August, we're kind of ready for it, but you're right. It just hit us so early and so fast. I don't think people were ready for it, and I think it's a good reminder. We have seen several very, very ill patients in the emergency department with heat stroke. We've seen a lot of people.
Which is the most serious.
Heat illnesses, it's a continuum, if you will. It's the same illness, but a different degree. And anything from heat rash, where, you know, usually in the skin folds, where you'd get the little glands that secrete your sweat get blocked up, to heat cramps, which is a situation where you lose water and sodium, and then your muscles will get cramping on you, to heat exhaustion, right, where you get so sweaty and so dehydrated and low on it that you get lightheaded and dizzy, and your temperature goes up, and typically, you know, in the 100 range, 101 range, to heat stroke. And the hallmark of heat stroke is you basically lose your ability to thermoregulate. You cannot regulate your temperature anymore, and your temperature, you know, spikes in excess of 104, 106. You get a lot of neurological things, passing out and seizures and loss of consciousness, those type of things.
When I'm teaching my classes for the Red Cross and we get on particularly heat stroke, I tell them not only is it the most advanced, more serious part of heat-related illnesses, but it's also kind of a central nervous system thing. Your body forgets how to sweat.
Right.
Yeah. And once you lose that ability to, like you said, thermoregulate or cool yourself off, things happen quickly.
They do. You know, our body's a wonderful organism, but it only can do what it can do. And plus, we throw a bunch of medicines on board. So obviously, the people most at risk are children less than 4, all adults greater than 60, and then people who are on medications, particularly cardiovascular medications, so high blood pressures, diuretics. In 2021, there were 1,500 deaths in the United States relative to heat-related illnesses, and over 60% of those were in people over 65 years of age and who had a cardiovascular background, who are on some meds for heart problems.
Be
careful.
I'm now getting into that realm.
Well, I'm a little short, so I'm okay so far.
But I can tell from my younger days, I get heat fatigued quicker than I used to.
Sure.
Yeah. Used to be, it didn't seem to bother me. I grew up in the South.
Yeah.
So it was hot and humidity, and through a few things I learned that I would tolerate temperatures better than most people, and in some cases, almost like emergency situations, I was the guy that generally got picked to go in because I could handle it better, tolerate it. But I don't want to do that anymore.
Yes, and acclimation is important. I mean, so if you're an outdoorsman, like I know that you are, and what I enjoy to do as well is, you know, try and limit your activities to morning and evening. You know, the game, typically, there's not much right now, but the game that you typically are going to be bedded down during the day anyways.
Right.
If you're going to be a fisherman, again, maybe try and avoid the heat of the day. Acclimate. They say maybe start at 20% and then 40, then 60, then 80 if you're going to have to work out in the heat. So 2 hours one day, then 4, then 6, then 8, and kind of build up to it and over a week's period of time. I'm an ER guy, so prevention's not really my ball game, but lots of hydration. it's job security. Make sure you have lots of fluids and water. And remember, when you sweat, you're not just losing fluids, you're losing electrolytes. So whether it's sport drinks or Pedialyte or those type of things are important to hydrate yourself with. And listen to your body.
A big one.
Listen to your body. You know, when you don't feel well, take a break, get out of the shade. And God forbid if you're have an emergency in the field and you can see that somebody right. has the issues, get them out of the sun, get them in a cool place, get their clothes off. Evaporation is important to cool us off, so get some cold water on them, move the air around them. You know, if you're way out and you want to get submerge them or get them into a cool lake or stream or something, mm-hmm. that's fine, but you got to make sure they don't have a seizure in there and then you end up right. with a drowning kind of situation. So, you know, try and prevent it, but if you don't, it's get them out and get them cool as fast as you can. And it's one thing what I've noticed is once people get either a frostbite injury or a heat-related injury, they seem to be more susceptible in the future.
I've noticed that too, particularly with the more severe heat-related mm-hmm. injuries. It hits them harder. They can feel it coming on.
Yeah, they really do.
One of the things you just mentioned there about listening to your body is critical. And don't ignore it. Mm-hmm. My personal physician is Jeff Breton,
mm-hmm.
and a couple years ago I was feeling my shoulder. Now I've damaged my shoulder severely a few times, and it was getting time to do something with it. And I was in talking to him and telling him what it was, and he says, "Well," he says, "you're listening to your body pretty good." He said, "We need to do something." And I ended up over with Dr. Jacobson. And
yeah.
I'm glad he's here.
He is too. He's had a whack at my shoulder too. The thing about listening to your body is as you get older, your body tends to talk more.
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. You just don't ignore the signs and symptoms. If you know you're not feeling well and, I'm going to push through it, et cetera. With these heats, the heat that's out there, it's a problem. And it's not just the heat, as you know, it's a heat index. So it's a combination of the humidity and the heat. I grew up in Omaha, and, you know, the Kearney to me is about the break point where we start to feel the humidity, and mm-hmm. I'll get back and visit family, and it's like, wow, the humidity is really high here. But we've really been experiencing some humidity here, so that gives you that heat index, and you just are not as efficient cooling yourself off.
I was going to mention that with our higher humidities that we've seen, you don't cool as fast.
Right.
It's harder to cool you off.
Yep.
So that's another thing to watch and think about when you're trying to deal with anything like that.
Sure is.
Now, you said that the younger and 60-plus, whatever, is more mm-hmm. susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
You know, because as you get older, and it's just a blessing of God given to you that you're growing older, your body loses its ability to control its temperature like it does when you're younger person. So you lose your ability to thermoregulate, as we call it. And as an infant or a child, you've not developed that very well. And these are things from having your capillaries dilate and get red and sweating and moving of fluids around. You just lose that ability. And like I said before, just given the age that you are, that people are on medications that stop that, whether they be diuretics that make you lose water to begin with, blood pressure medications, which control your tank size, if you will, mm-hmm. you know. Lots of, unfortunately, psychiatric medications. Obviously, alcohol, methamphetamines, cocaine, those type of medications really mess up your thermoregulation. We'll see people who are hyperthermic emergencies just because they've been on meths for several days. So it really messes with your ability to control.
I never thought about the meth part, that's a big issue here.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it's part of our world, and every year that I've worked in, it's been part of their world too.
Now, alcohol with heat-related was one that I had questioned because I'd always learned that alcohol will help dilate the blood vessels a little bit, and that heat allows you to release heat more. You don't want to give alcohol in the wintertime because that, which violates every tenet of every John Wayne movie you've ever seen, whether it's, you know, a toenail or snake bite, give him a shot of whiskey.
That's right.
But I didn't realize that for heat-related illness, alcohol was definitely not a...
Yeah, it's not a good thing for two reasons. Number one, it inhibits a hormone, without getting too complex, called anti-ADH. And so it's a diuretic. So you have a hormone that floats around your body that makes you conserve water, and alcohol inhibits that hormone, and so you pee a lot,
right.
and you become dehydrated. That's why in the morning with hangovers, not that I've ever experienced one personally, but in the morning you typically are dehydrated, and so drink fluids in the morning. And then when you do urinate a lot, you lose a lot of water-dependent vitamins. Vitamin D, E, A, and K are the ones that you tend to lose the most in your urine. And so they always tell you, you know, take a Tylenol, Advil, and drink water and take a vitamin. Well, alcohol and heat is a problematic too because it dehydrates you.
And mentioning urine, that was one of the other symptoms, triggers you've seen. If urine is clear, that's pretty good, but the darker it gets, the more problems.
That's right.
Have, right?
And then we'll ask people, you know, it's like, how color is your urine, been dark or not, or type of deal. And so it is a really, actually, unless you're on a diuretic, of course, it's a very good gauge of your hydration status. It sounds gross, but just look at your urine and make sure that it's looks as close to water as it is as possible.
Okay.
And you take your morning vitamin, of course, and that always gets, you know, colored after that. But after, you know, throughout the day, try and keep it clear.
Okay. How can a person tell that they're starting to succumb to this?
You know, so you sweating profusely, and you start to get a little lightheaded when you stand up. You're doing your yard work or, you know, that type of deal, and you get that 1 second or two where you get a little bit lightheaded. Really, really tired, breathing hard, you know, maybe a little bit foggy kind of thing. The problem is once you get into real trouble, and mentation-wise, you probably don't know it. So
right.
You have a decreased level of consciousness and pass out and those things. And we've had two very, very sick people here in the emergency department within the last couple of weeks who we found outside passed out. So they're in the heat. They're already passed out. They have a temperature of 106. And it's a real problem. So emergency cooling techniques, right? So get their clothes off, get them wet. We'll spray people down with water and then put fans on them. We put ice packs on the major arteries, so in the groin, the neck, the armpits, those type of situations.
Right.
When we put them on a ventilator, we'll use cooled humidified oxygen because your lungs are a big capillary bed.
Right.
if we have to, we can irrigate their bladder with cooled solutions and or even put chest tubes or tubes into your abdominal cavity and circulate fluid. And we have cooling blankets, right? So one of the big things in the last several years is after a cardiac arrest is cooling a body down. It helps with brain recovery. So we already have that device, which is a big cooling machine that has pipes into it and blankets that we put on that cool them down. So we have lots of ways now to cool people off. Unfortunately, if you're out in the field, it's make do with what you have.
Right.
Get them in the shade, get them naked, get them cold, move the air around them, and see if you can avoid it. And then avoidance, obviously, is where the money's at.
Now, I've always heard that the progression, if we want to call it that, with the nomenclature is heat fatigue, heat exhaustion, and then you go to heat stroke.
Yes, sir.
Heat fatigue, that's where you're talking about it. You're feeling maybe just a little woozy or just something not quite right.
Right.
And then heat exhaustion, that's when...
super heavy sweating.
And the cramping
right.
really shows up.
Yeah, because of the sodium losses and really lighted when you stand up and exert yourself and, you know, almost that tipsy-turvy kind of a thing until you progress into the getting neurological findings, you know, strokes and seizures and loss of consciousness, those type of things.
With heat exhaustion, one of the things I've always looked at or talked about is, you know, they're talking about loss of fluids and the electrolytes. And... again, without getting too deep into the weeds, why does the electrolytes upset the body chemistry so bad? And what's that doing to you?
Sure. It's, you know, electrolytes are responsible for most of our muscular activity in our body. So it's the shifting of electrolytes in and out of cell membranes that allow our bodies to have an electrical current, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that allows our muscles to fire, so our nerves stimulate a muscle, but they only can move because of movement of sodium and potassium through your heart rhythm, for example. Very, very dependent on sodium and also potassium. So you lose that sodium and the muscles will cramp on you because they've lost their electrical status. I mean,
the conductivity.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah, and you know that we call them sodium channels, which are we have in our neurological system, and you throw off that, then they. This is really a abstract way of thinking, but they short. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They can't function normally, and then they end up spasming. So drink lots of water, but the problem with that is then you can drive your sodium down more because you
dilute it.
Right? Yes, sir.
Right.
So it's real important to drink electrolyte balanced solutions. You know, if you're a diabetic, you probably shouldn't be drinking the full sugar Gatorades, but there are some sports drinks that don't have a lot of sugar in them.
Gatorade itself, they have one now called G-Zero.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's a sugar-free version,
sure.
But the electrolytes are still there.
Yes, exactly.
One of the things I noticed with some of the Red Cross courses I teach is now they're saying one of the things to drink is coconut milk.
Huh.
What's in coconut
milk? I have no idea. That's, okay.
Have you ever tried coconut milk?
You know, only with rum in it, so no, I don't.
After seeing that, I went and tried it, and I would just assume somebody beat me with a stick.
Really?
Rather than try drinking that. That is some nasty stuff.
No, not had it.
What about, when I was, you know, in high school and college playing football, they would, you know, take the breaks, give you water, and then salt tablets.
Yeah.
What are salt tablets? So
salt tablets are sodium chloride tablets, and the problem, and we discourage that in the salt tablet form for a couple reasons. You sit them in your stomach, and they can draw water into your intestinal system and cause some loose stools, some diarrhea, and actually lead to some fluid loss that way, because they're not in solution. They're tablets of it, and it's not a balanced solution, if you will. I think that throughout the summer months, I think there's nothing wrong with a little bit more salt on your food for sodium, especially if you're an outdoor working. But there's certainly better solutions out there than the salt tablets. You know, when I grew up too, it was the same thing. They'd give you these salt tablets, and that's because that was what they did back then, and then make you drink a bunch of water. I think that was really pre-Gatorades and pre...
It was.
Yeah, all that
for
stuff.
For me, it was.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, Gatorade came along, somewhere in the latter 70s.
Yeah.
There's actually a trainer for
Florida.
Florida,
yep.
Gators that...
Yep. That's right.
Developed that. And
they used to drink pickle water is what they first started off with, because it has a lot of salts and electrolytes in the pickling solution that's in it.
I love that.
Yeah, it is. And I love my pickles too. But then you're right. Then they developed that solution from the University of Florida.
I wonder what they made on that. I hope they kept,
the maybe patent. It's like the Kool-Aid out of Cambridge, right? You know?
Right.
They got the patent on that.
What are some good ways to protect yourself? Just thinking ahead a little bit, what can you do to stave off any of these problems?
You know, I think you just hit the nail on the head, thinking ahead. You know, so if you're, you know, hey, this weekend I'm going to go and we're going to go hike, and we're going to go up to Fort Robinson, and we're going to do this, or I'm going to really fish and that type of deal. It's just think a little bit about it and try and limit your activities to the coolest time of days that you can. If you do need to be out and working in the heat of the day, make sure that hats are important to shade your head and body region. Stop, take breaks, drink fluids, and listen to your body. And if you start to feel poorly, don't be stubborn enough to just ignore that. Go sit down for a while.
It'll wait.
You know, it's not worth your life.
No. I've had in quite a few of my columns recently about switching tactics if you're primarily for angling, and this time of the year I switch toward going nocturnal, just to get away from the heat, just to get away from a couple reasons. Heat for you, but the bright sunshine and all like that drive the fish deeper. They get harder to go after.
Yeah. So I'm not much of a fisherman. I recreationally fish, but I like to bow fish. I'm an archery guy is what I do, and so nighttime is always, as you know, good for that too for archery fishing. So,
Are you... Do you know the name Darrell Bauer with the Game and Parks? He's one of the chief fisheries guys.
I do not.
He's probably one of the more senior fisheries biologists with the Game and Parks right now. And he was on the radio one day, and we were talking similar line of questioning and stuff. And I said at night, and I said, you know, I'd be a heck of a lot better fisherman if I could shoot him.
You just got to get used to that angle from the water, you know, the refraction.
But once you get
that in your brain figured out, that it's fun.
Some years ago when we were doing the outdoor expos here, I brought in a team of guys that at the time had the world's record alligator gar.
Oh, wow.
This thing was huge, man. Somewhere in my picture files, I have some guy that was coming to the show, and he had his 18-month-old daughter with him, and he had his daughter in the mouth of this thing because they had, you know, mounted it so it was opened up. Thing was like 9 feet long and about 50 inches around. It was a huge fish.
Huh.
And their company, their production company, was called Aim Low Productions because of the refraction
thing.
You have to have to take that into account when you're bow fishing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like I said, I didn't know you were a bow fisherman. I knew you were an archer, but I didn't know you liked bow fishing.
So we have a little bit of ground out by Maranatha, and we have the channel of the fish of the plat goes through there, and then we live out here on the lake. And when the cotton flies, boy, the carp.
Okay, exactly.
And it's funny, you'll see folks out there on these boats that have they have more lights on it than the Empire State Building.
And that's becoming a bigger and bigger thing all the time is bow fishing, and then carp fishing itself, I think more people are recognizing that carp are really a challenging fish to go after with a rod and reel. Mm-hmm. They're very challenging. They're very strong fighters. Mm-hmm. I refer to them as Platte River bonefish. I don't know if you've ever bonefished down in the Gulf.
No, I have not.
They hit hard and they run hard. And that's just the way carp do.
It's fun. Then you shoot the big ones. I mean, now, as you know, out there at the lake, there are some whoppers out there. And you know, when your reel on that bow is not like a real good reel. And so it's, but the good news is you're shooting, what is that, 80-pound test or something? It's a thick line, so you rarely lose them.
Have you ever forgot to set the button on your reel and launch an arrow?
Set the button. Mine is
so it spools out.
So mine is it spools all the time unless you grip it.
Oh, okay.
So it's a free spooling one. So I don't have to be that smart. So.
I've done that, and boy,
that'll pull that rod out of your hand.
You hear that 22 sound crack when the spring snaps, and then watch for whatever's coming back at you.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than having an arrow explode on you. I've experienced that.
Was that off the rest?
I flexed the arrow, just flexed to the point, and as I was holding it, I could see right above my hand where it indented onto the grip. It missed my hand by half inch or something, and just, you know, it sounds like a 22, like you said, just pow, just blows up. So every time I shoot an arrow now, I flex them just to make sure that they don't break or crack, you know.
So was it
the carbon?
The carbon one?
Yeah. So
I've got a picture of a guy that the arrow flexed and broke on the rest, and it went through his hand just above the knuckle of his left index finger.
Yep.
And just
I've seen that several times throughout my career. It just that always gets you there, just right on your hand. So I was lucky. So a lesson learned. God taught me a lesson, and now I bend my arrows before I shoot them. So
that's a good one to bend. Now I'm primarily a stick bow shooter. And use cedar shafted arrows, but that's still a good tip. Check them out.
Yeah, a little torque to them.
What else can you tell us about heat related illnesses this morning?
You know, what people will find out is, you know, when they have, and they're miserable. I feel sorry for these folks. So they'll come in, and a lot of times they'll have nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, and the cramps, and then they can't get ahead of it, right? Because now once you're on that continuum that you're already got your heat fatigue or heat cramps or heat exhaustion, you can't keep fluids down. So unfortunately, you may need to come visit me in the emergency department, which is always a pleasant situation, and we'll throw IVs in you. We'll give you normal saline, typically, that has the saline in it, and anti-vomiting medications, and a cool place to sit down, and hopefully a little bit of empathy, and make you feel better.
For people that are working in the outdoors or recreating hard in the outdoors, are there some things they can carry with them just to make sure that they've at least got some of the first steps covered?
Sure. You know, it's as a having done some backpacking, that sort of stuff, it's always hard to want to lug around all that water and all this, but
water's
they make the
weight.
but they make the little solutions, right, in packets. Mm-hmm. So when you do find your stream and you do strain it or use your filter, whatever you do with it, then you can add those electrolytes to it. So
I do that. I have some. It's like Kool-Aid with electrolyte in it. It's kind of an energy drink, and then I have the Life Straw.
Sure.
And can make my own water right there and get a cup and do that.
Right.
So
when I go to Alaska or Canada and have to use I have that two-bag system, you know, type of deal. It works very, very well. And I haven't got Giardia yet, thank goodness. So, but then you can use the water that's at hand that you find, and then you can just add your own electrolyte solutions to it. You know, it's there's in my opinion, and trust me, I'm just as crazy about the hunting as anybody else is, but it's not worth it. You know, just don't take those chances. Know what you know what you don't know, and it's always better to come back another day to hunt.
The hard part is knowing what you don't know.
Well, yes, it's true. It's a problem in medicine too, trust me.
You have to start, you have to do some studying ahead of time.
So. Yeah.
Or how's our time, Mr. Engineer there?
A minute or two.
You said you hadn't done Giardia yet. That's good.
Yeah.
I haven't done that either. I did manage to pull amoebic dysentery one time.
Oh, that sounds pleasant.
That was, yeah, that was quite exciting.
Uh-huh.
you know. But that's, you know, you learn not to drink bad water.
And this time of year, with you know, the brandings are typically over right now, but with brandings, we usually see several cases of either salmonella or crypto because of holding calves down, and of course the calves do what they do when they get stressed, and and includes getting, you know, stuff on you, and then you end up getting something in there. So we always see some of that during the spring of the year. So,
and then of course you always got a windmill and a tank next to
that. Right.
How many people just go over and grab water right out of the out of the stock tank?
And those ranchers are they're hard people. I'm fine, and then they end up coming in pretty sick, you know, by the time they get so volume depleted. So. And it's, you know, not just archery people or not just hunters in general, but those ranchers. You're out there, and I'll shout out to your pets, right? You know,
definitely.
You know, they don't know what the heat, and you want to go out and fetch with your lab, and it's hot, and so just don't forget your pets when you're out there, and be a good neighbor. Go see your neighbor. That's a grandma. Go see, you know, somebody that maybe have some intellectual disabilities. Check on them. And people who are disadvantaged financially who may not have air conditioning. So we live in a nice town, a nice community, and we need to learn to take care of each other and continue to do so.
I just did that this week. A couple of the friends of mine that are 20 years my senior.
Yeah.
Just called, checked,
so
see how they're doing.
Yeah.
And one of them was out mowing.
Don't
do that. Yeah. So, well, I sure appreciate you taking the time to come in and
my
visit
pleasure.
With us this morning.
Anytime you need somebody to some stuff, I'll come make it up for
you. I'll take you up on that, because there's some other issues that have, you know, tangent runs off into the medical field on
sure.
it, and you'd be a great person
to
have.
You should just put my phone on speed dial when you're on the air, and you call me, and I'll answer, and you can be call a phone a friend.
Don't tempt us. We've done stuff
I think everybody in the state has my cell phone number, so it's okay.
And just the other way around. We've had calls come in while we're on the show, too, so that's great. So, anyway, appreciate the time. I'm glad you were able to make it work, and stay cool.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing this. It's important. Thank you for bringing the awareness.
Very good. That's it for this week's show, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.